Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday through Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show co-hosted by Vera Resnick and Debbie Bruck. We're challenging you to join us on our journey to complete Samuel Hahnemann's Organon in 1 year. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, talking with classical homeopath Vera Resnick. Today is July 8th, 2010, and you're listening to show number 47 of Who's Reading the Organon. We will finally finish up reading aphorism number 11. It's taken a whole week, and hopefully move on to aphorism number 12. And I believe Vera may be on the line with us.
Hi, Debbie. Hi, everyone.
Hello. I hope everybody's doing well today. It should be a good day.
Amen
and
to
so,
that.
You're into a good day. Me too. We've got to pick ourselves up and think positive thoughts. And also, please take a look at your inbox or your junk mail or trash or wherever. There was a brand new newsletter sent out from HWC, and it's really fun to read through because I give a little bit of hints on how to be a good homeopathic HWC citizen and some little hints on getting around the internet the best you can. Of course, there is news about homeopathy too. And also, please take a look at Tamara Montenegro has posted a fantastic video about her agro-homeopathic experiment, and it's called La Gata Gorta on Homeopath, and it's a nice little video that she's put together. Dr. Kay Saji has been posting in the HWC BTR group, who's reading the Organon from this week. He got the idea from the cartoon mind concept, and it's kind of taken off from there. And I do think that we are never finished questioning, seeking, searching for answers within ourselves. And by sharing our concerns, doubts, and thoughts with other people, we can work together in unison for finding the answers to our own personal questions. And maybe get some group answers there, too. For any other kind of inspiration, get on Twitter. Become a peep or a tweet or whatever we want to call each other who are on Twitter. And it's really a lot of fun because we can encourage each other with positive thoughts and news. And it's almost like having a little personal email there. That's about as far as I'm going to go today because we want to get through this. And take it away, Vera.
Okay. So we're on the last part of aphorism 11 of the footnote. Is that right?
Yeah, so we're not going to review from what is dynamic influence. We're going to move forward. Are we just going to do for instance or in a similar way, or these medicines act upon us?
I suppose it's... Possibly...
Okay, we're having...
Can you hear me?
We're running in... Yeah, we're kind of fading in and out there, but just to let people know that we are just two people studying the Organon together, and we've been going through each aphorism, and we've taken a whole week on aphorism number 11. We're just going to pick up on the end of it, and wherever Vera decides is a good place to continue with it today.
Okay, well, I think let's just repeat, without reading through the whole thing, repeat the ideas. In the aphorism itself, Hanuman talks about how it's not the body that's ill. When someone is ill, it's not their body that's ill, it's the vital force that needs to be addressed. The vital force is ill or deranged, and the vital force is making its illness known by means of morbid symptoms. And these symptoms are manifestation of disease and the sensation and functions of those parts of the organism exposed to senses of observer and physician. And we've been having discussion about the concept, whether the concept of parts of the organism exposed to the senses now includes test results.
Right.
That's been a discussion that's been going on. It's a very much an open discussion. To my mind, the jury is still out on that, but everyone has their own opinion. Just to recap on this particular footnote, because the aphorism itself says, it's not the material part of the body that is sick. It is the non-material part of the body. So Hanuman goes into discussion in the footnote about the difference between material and non-material and showing us examples of non-material forces in our world, such as magnets, and also such as infection, where we can also talk about different kinds of vectors of infection, but Hanuman sees infection itself as being a dynamic non-material. He uses the word spiritual, but he's not talking, as far as I understand it, he's not talking about spiritual in the sense of soul. He's talking about spiritual in the sense of non-material, spiritual in the sense of dynamic. So where we got to, we talked about, we read Hanuman's words, rather, about how the smallest dose, which has less material and more energy, can act more strongly on the immaterial vital force than crude medicinal substances that have a lot of material but less dynamized energy in them. So there's a certain concept going on there. I suggest that we read from It Is Not in the Corporeal Atoms. Okay, I'll start there.
Okay.
It is not. Is that okay in recap, Debbie? Do you have any suggestion?
It sounded good to me. I actually really enjoyed the part that you said, the smallest dose has energy that can act more strongly upon the non-material. That's the action of similars, is it not?
Mm-hmm.
It's the smallest dose is touching that aspect of the being that is the vital force, which I really like this definition that you have, that it's not spiritual per se as we think in our minds, but it is the non-material. So those opposing forces or those, to differentiate it that way. Okay, so where did you say we were?
Okay, so we'll start. It is not in the corporeal atoms of these highly dynamized medicines, nor in their physical or mathematical surfaces with which the higher energies of the dynamized medicines are being interpreted, but vainly as still sufficiently material, that the medicinal energy is found. So medicinal energy is not in the corporeal atoms. More likely, there lies invisible in the moistened globule or in its solution, an unveiled, liberated, specific medicinal force contained in the medicinal substance, which acts dynamically by contact with a living animal fiber upon the whole organism, without communicating to it anything material, however highly attenuated, and acts more strongly the more free and more immaterial the energy has become through the dynamization. So here we have, it acts more strongly if it's a smaller dose, more dynamized, the energy in the substance becomes freer and more immaterial, and therefore, like you said, Debbie, better able to communicate with the immaterial vital force. And I do think that's it's a question of speaking the same language.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that interesting? I picked up on a little thing that you said. Through the process that we manufacture the remedies, the potentization process of succussion and dilution, we're liberating a force that is able to communicate, and this is a really big concept with Aphorism 11, I'm taking to my heart, and I'm taking home this concept of communicating these dynamic forces, these two things. And so by liberating it in the way that the remedy is made, it is able to communicate with the vital force. Am I on track, off track?
Yeah, I think so. I find myself thinking also that sometimes you need to shake a person up to have them release some of their inhibitions so that you can see who they are. And in a way, that's the image that comes to me. It's like we're shaking this medicinal substance up in order to see what can it really do, in order to release it from its material inhibitions.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's fun to shake things up. I love to make smoothies. And also, whenever anybody talks about shaking things up, I automatically think about creating a magnet, because I did that with my dad when I was a little girl. We used to tap, you know how you tap or shake or rub to do the friction, and we took a nail and wrapped the wire around it, and we made these electronic circuits. So I do like the concept. Shake it up. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And go ahead, and we're on Is It Then.
Yeah. Would you like to read the last one there?
Okay, thank you. Is it then so utterly impossible for our age, celebrated for its wealth and clear thinkers, to think of dynamic energy as something non-corporeal, since we see daily phenomena which cannot be explained in any other manner? If one looks upon something nauseous and becomes inclined to vomit, did a material emetic come into his stomach, which compels him to this anti-peristaltic movement? Was it not solely the dynamic effect of the nauseating aspect upon his imagination? You know, even if you hear people vomiting, it really grosses you out.
Yes.
And if you do have that personal inclination to do it yourself. And if one raises his arm, does it occur through a material, visible instrument? Ooh, levitation. And a lever? Is it not solely the conceptual dynamic energy of his will which raises it? Oh, boy. He really gives us something to ponder here.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing if not a thinker, Hahnemann.
Well, he gives us, he's good at giving examples and explaining thoroughly what he's talking about. And he gives you something in your own personal life experience that can bring the message home, can really make it make sense of what he's trying to teach us. So
mm-hmm.
True, everybody has felt this nauseous feeling of when somebody else is vomiting. You're not vomiting, you're not sick. And yet, you then are inclined to...
Yeah, let's not dwell on it too long, Debbie.
It's been a recent experience of mine. Okay.
Definitely something infectious about the concept.
Aha! Yes,
but,
it is quite... And won't it go so for yawning? You know,
oh,
this
yawning is
so
fascinating.
Yawning is really catchy. Even monkeys catch each other yawning.
Yeah.
And there are a couple of us. Mm-hmm.
Also, like, if one person is sitting in a restaurant, starts scratching his head, then three people around them will start scratching. It's, anyway, shall we move on?
That hard.
Yeah. Shall we move on to Aphorism 12?
I'm thrilled. Go
ahead. Okay, we're moving out of Aphorism 11, finally. It is the morbidly affected vital energy alone that produces diseases, so that the morbid phenomena perceptible to our senses express at the same time all the internal change, that is to say, the whole morbid derangement of the internal dynamics. In a word, they reveal the whole disease. Also, the disappearance under treatment of all morbid phenomena and of all the morbid alterations that differ from the healthy vital operations, certainly affects and necessarily implies the restoration of the integrity of the vital force and therefore the recovered health of the whole organism. This seems to me to be a bit of a recap. Let's look at the footnote. There's a brief footnote here. How the vital force causes the organism to display morbid phenomena, that is, how it produces disease, it would be of no practical utility to the physician to know, and will forever remain concealed from him. Only what it is necessary for him to know of the disease, and what is fully sufficient for enabling him to cure it, has the Lord of Life revealed to his senses. I find that footnote fascinating. How about you?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Tell me your thoughts on this one.
Well, first of all, the aphorism itself seems to be a recap. It's saying the symptoms are produced by the vital force, not alone, not they're not produced by the body, they're produced in the body by the vital force.
Mm-hmm.
The morbid phenomena perceptible to our senses express the entire disease. And therefore, once those morbid phenomena disappear under treatment, this implies that the entire disease is gone and that health is restored. Now,
mm-hmm.
in the footnote is, it expresses to me part of what's so interesting with Heinemann's thought. In some elements, he digs to find out the why. But he is really interested in the practical elements, in the essence of, if I can use this phenomenon, if I can use this way of working to heal people, and it works, and it's repeatable, first of all, I don't care how. And then we always go back to my favorite quote, which I won't quote over again. But Heinemann basically says it's not how that interests him. It's the fact that the experience shows that it works. That's of primary interest to him because he had to deal with patients on a daily basis and he was involved with healing the sick and not with philosophizing and wondering how, unless he was trying to find a better way of doing something that he was already doing. I think that's the extent to which the how did interest him. But on the other hand, you see Heinemann's religious orientation, a definite belief in what's the expression now, intelligent design, that human beings are created in a certain way, and they're created in such a way that the vital force can reveal the disease to the physician's senses in order to cure. And there is a sense here that from a religious point of view, certain elements within the human being will always remain concealed. So I find that very interesting. It's like this gap almost between Heinemann, who rests very strongly on intellect, but will ultimately come down on the side of experience, experiential activity, on does it work and how can I repeat it?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we...
That's the tip of the iceberg.
Well, we typically consider, when we think of Heinemann, as an intellectual, right? And yet, here, in a one nice short sentence, he's basically telling us that he's a very practical man. The work that he's presenting is in how to do it. I mean, I've said this before. This is the first how-to book ever written. And basically, he's giving us a recipe book, how do you do it, and he's giving us the introduction, all of this, the theory of how this came about. But what he says is, and this is only aphorism number 12, that what you need to focus on is what we have, what is given. What is the given? What is the, even in a math problem, or you have to start with an assumption, right? You have to have something to go on that everybody agrees with. And that's kind of what he's giving us. This is the base, and then from there, let's see what we can do with it. And so he's saying God, intelligent design, whatever source we're getting this information, here it is. It's in front of our eyes. It's observable. It's tangible. We can do something with this. This is our ingredients to the beginning of the recipe. This is what you have to work with. And then that's all that we need to know. We don't have to add other spices or other things to it. This is what's given from the individual who's before us and perhaps from those who are surrounding that individual, because you can get other information. Am I on a right track?
I think yes, and I think I cannot resist. I have to quote more from my favorite quote from Chronic Diseases. Is that okay with you, Debbie?
Okay. I adore it.
This is all within the same section. I think I'm just going to put all this into a group discussion that people can see it if they're interested. Hanuman says, "Do we refuse to imitate any operation until the wonderful forces of nature on which the result is based are clearly brought before our eyes and made comprehensible even to a child? I suggest anyone who uses a computer or a car listens very carefully to this. Would it not be silly to refuse to strike sparks from the stone and flint because we cannot comprehend how so much combined caloric can be in these bodies? Or how this can be drawn out by rubbing or striking so that the particles of steel which are rubbed off by the stroke of the hard stone are melted and as glowing little balls cause the tinder to catch fire? And yet we strike fire with it without understanding or comprehending this miracle of the inexhaustible caloric hidden in the cold steel or the possibility of cooling it out with a frictional stroke. Again, it would be just as silly as if we should refuse to learn to write, because we cannot comprehend how one man can communicate his thought to another through pen, ink, and paper, and yet we communicate our thoughts to a friend in a letter without either being able or desirous of comprehending this psychico-physical miracle. Why then should we hesitate to conquer and heal the bitterest foes of the life of our fellow men, the chronic diseases, in the stated way, which punctually followed is the best possible method? Because why should we hesitate to use that? Because we do not see how these cures are affected."
Mm-hmm.
And I think also here we need to distinguish, because there are practices that are called into question because it's not clear how they work, because nothing is clear about how they work.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these practices may involve within homeopathy or within other areas, distance healing or more spiritualistic healing practices. But Hanuman here is talking about the practice of homeopathy which rests on the law of similars.
Mm-hmm.
So on the one hand, he's saying there is a law, and he does present that. He presents that very solidly in the subsequent aphorisms. But on the other hand, he says there is something behind that law which we cannot comprehend. And almost from this footnote to the aphorism, he's saying we're not supposed to comprehend. If you look at it from a religious point of view, it's almost as if we can eat the food from God's kitchen, but we can't go in and make it ourselves.
No, we can't, although they do try.
There's a certain element of that feeling, and I think it is a religious point of view, and I think it demonstrates Hanuman's point of view. I'm very happy if anyone has any comment, any disagreement with that. That's really fine.
Mm-hmm.
But that seems to be the imagery, and it's interesting because one comment that I heard once from a religious man who's opposed to tampering with genetics, because he said it's one thing to be to be a guest in the house of God, it's another thing to move around the furniture.
Uh-huh.
In a way, I'm getting something of a similar image here from what Hanuman is saying in the footnote. I don't know. What do you think?
You won't believe what's coming into my mind. as you talk,
do tell.
Well, Frankenstein. That's what's coming into my mind, how Frankenstein tries to create life, you know, and I don't think it's possible for us to do so. I mean, we do tinker, and when I think about, I think when we go go back to striking sparks from stone and flint. I'm thinking, oh, Neanderthal man could have used this recipe too. It's not something that is old and ancient. This fundamental law of similars could easily have been used by ancient man. And here it is, all of the naysayer skeptic crowd, they tell us we are basing our work today on something that is old and outdated. But if something is true, if something is universal law, it's not ever going to be outdated. The problem with allopaths, or some of them, I won't give them a generalization or stereotypic, is they're looking for this why, and they do not have the fundamental base, that assumption, the aphorism of similars, something to go on that they often go on, and they're floundering. And that's why they change their recommendations and their medicines and how they approach it constantly, because they don't have that solid base that homeopaths do have to work on. And so that's where I was. I was imaging all of those different types of people mm-hmm. from ancient history to through movie theater.
I know when I first read that section from my favorite quote that I read out before, I really found myself thinking of all the so many things we use in our lives today that we have no idea how they work. What we do need is a user's manual, and those are getting rarer and rarer. But we need to know how to use things, but we don't need to know how they work in order to use them effectively.
And I think, what is the number one bestseller books on the market? How-to books. Everybody really does want to know how to better their life, how to improve, how to overcome. So Marilyn Friedman is posting a little comment. Symptoms are the indicator that the vital force is mistuned. Religious view, none of our business of what is going on with the vital force. But that doesn't mean we cannot treat. Thank you, Marilyn. I wish I had remembered one of the tweets that somebody said to me. I'll try and find it yesterday. Somebody said the hardest thing about business is minding your own. Ha! I remembered it.
But what's interesting is that generally, I think in the world, we're moving away from the concept of having to hunt always for why something is happening. We're moving more strongly to a concept of treating. I see that within therapeutic models. There was one point when analysis was very much what everyone was doing. They were all trying to find out why they were in the situation they were and which parent's fault it was, which as a parent is an interesting concept. Whereas now, therapy tends to be much more focused, much more practical, not so much why did this happen or how, but how can we get your life back on track? It's a different focus. The rise of coaching also as a method, I think, reflects that. We want to know how to do things, and not necessarily we'll find the answer in why they went wrong, because that inevitably is speculation anyway. We're running out of time, right?
I am absolutely in total amazement. So in therapy today, we focus on things like EMDR, EMF, coaching, advice, and really people are looking how to solve their problem, not blame or why. Okay, so can you give us an umbrella for today?
I think there is something more I would like to say, but I'll try to remember about it tomorrow. I'll say it tomorrow about these aphorisms in summary.
Okay. All right. Okay. I'm going to say the Organon is a how-to book. Take it off your shelf and read it. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
Thank you.
It's been a great show.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon? With homeopaths Vera Resnick and Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. Remember to take the Organon off the shelf and read it.